Hello and welcome to the Three Teachers Podcast, the podcast for learners and students of the English language, where three heads are much better than one. Three English teachers. There's myself, Ajahn Ken from Get English Tips. There's Andy from Andy's Everyday English. And today's very special guest teacher is Teacher Michael from Instagram's English with Michael. Join us on our socials and our conversations on your favourite podcast platform. Coming up in today's episode, we'll be asking how to improve English if you don't have anyone to speak to. What to do if you have blank brain syndrome. You know what to say, but nothing comes out. How long is it going to take you to learn English, even if you're patient? Which books to read? And how to find a native speaker to help you perfect your English. All that and more coming up in episode number 8 of the Three Teachers Podcast. Live on our Facebook and YouTube page. So my name's Ajahn Ken. I'm a native English teacher from Scotland in the United Kingdom. And I specialise in helping university graduates prepare for interviews with multinational companies. And today we've got Andy, our joint co-host Andy. Andy, you want to say a quick hello?
Hi, everybody. How are you?
And we've got Michael here, Michael Lavers. Is it Lavers? I've never said your surname, Michael.
Lavers. Everyone Lavers. Says Lavers, though, but it's Lavers. Right. Yeah, hi,
we've got
everyone.
Michael, Michael. We've got Michael from Level Up English. He's got a fantastic podcast and well-known on the Instagram channels, yeah? So we've got the three of us, and this is the Three Teachers Live podcast, and it's answering questions that we all get sent to our Instagram and Facebook accounts, etc. So hopefully you're going to get three different perspectives on various things to do with English. So today's topic we're going to be looking at is all about resources. How are you going to learn English if you have no one to speak to? The big thing, you know. I always get questions like this. I don't know about you guys. It's, because we are pretty lucky, we live in an English-speaking countries, you know, or majority of what we do. And a lot of students, they don't have, you know, they don't have anyone to speak to, and they feel a bit kind of left out about learning English. You know, they're having to kind of prepare on their own, etc. So today's podcast is all about that. It's all about what can you do if you're going to be learning by yourself, yeah? Mm-hmm. So let's
introduce ourselves a little bit, you know, for those that are new over here. I think that it's a good idea to introduce ourselves. Hi guys, I'm Andy from Andy's Everyday English. I am a certified teacher with 14 years experience, and I'm specialized in training students, especially from the ESL, meaning like second language learners, for the Cambridge exams at the moment. Also, I am a speaking coach for those that are interested in practicing their business English. So, hi there.
Business English and exam English as well.
Yes, exam preparation, specifically at the moment, Cambridge exam, because right now I'm based in Europe, and apparently Cambridge exams and the IELTS is kind of like the hot stuff here. while if you are, as any product, but if you, for example, are thinking about like Canada or the US, probably the TOEFL is more the certification that you should invest your time and money in.
Excellent. Michael, do you want to say hello?
Yeah, I could do. Hello, everyone. I'm Michael Lavers. As Ken said before, I've got the podcast Level Up English podcast. That's my main focus these days. I'm on Instagram as well. I'm from the southwest of England, and that's right, I've been teaching for about 7 years now. That's probably it at the moment, yeah.
Whereabouts in the southwest? Are you, is it Cornwall, right?
Yes, grew up in Cornwall, yeah.
So I always find this fascinating. In the UK, we all speak English, right? But in certain parts of the UK, we have different languages kind of thing, right? And I just, in Scotland, we have Gaelic and we have the Scots language. Down your neck of the woods, I believe, do you have like a kind of a Gaelic language down there?
A Celtic language,
that's the word I'm looking for. Is that right? How many people speak it down there?
Yeah, so we have the Cornish language, and it's very similar to the Welsh language, which is more more widely spoken up there. But I don't think anyone speaks it as a first language anymore, not for hundreds of years. And I think the people who are learning it probably is less than 1,000. It's not many people.
Oh, really?
I'm one of them, but I'm still a beginner.
Are you learning it? Yeah.
I'm trying to, but it's quite challenging. Yeah.
What's the name of the language?
Just Cornish, or if you want the proper Cornish name, it's Cornoic.
All right, Cornoic. All right, okay. So as part of that language went into the English language?
I was also interested in that. As far as I know, it didn't really. It just kind of got replaced by English. I don't think there are many words that have integrated, you know. It's kind of disappeared mostly.
All right. The reason I'm asking it, when I'm learning the Scottish Gaelic language, and, I'm very much a beginner, but right at the beginning, there's a Scottish Gaelic word called cheery, and it means goodbye, like cheerio. So the Gaelics kind of came into use within the British English, kind of, you know, there's vocabularies kind of moved over, you know, into... Because I guess down in England, you say cheerio as well for goodbye, don't you?
Yeah, it's kinda, just a very British thing to say, yeah.
May I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
What inspired you to keep on learning this languages that for some would be, for example, not that practical? Because right now it's all like, oh, if I cannot use it for my job or if I cannot add it to my CV, what is it for, right? So what inspired you to, go back to the roots?
Go back in time.
Yes.
Kind of thing. Michael, what about you?
Oh, yeah, I'd love to hear your opinion, Ken, but I think for me it was, I don't expect I'll ever really use it in my life. It's not really a useful language. It's just about learning about the history, connecting to, I guess, the local culture a bit more. Mm-hmm, kind of makes me feel more connected to my ancestors, I suppose, rather than just spawning randomly in
the country. So it's your... ancestors, your kind of heritage, all based in that area.
Yeah, you know, there's like ancestry websites. I looked it up, and on my mum's side, it goes back at least 500 years in Cornwall. So I feel quite quite Cornish.
My God! So all right, so learning the language is actually bringing your kind of history up to the present time.
Yeah, it makes me feel more connected, you know, to the past.
Yeah. Excellent. I started learning it because I was ashamed that I didn't. Because, you know, I speak a couple of languages conversationally, you know, and I thought, why am I not speaking Gaelic? And so I just got Duolingo out and I started, you know, doing it 20 minutes every day. And in Scotland, the Gaelic language was kind of kicked out. And English was replaced, a bit like the Cornish language, you know. But they're coming back in Scotland. We have like road signs and, you know, government kind of buildings have the Gaelic language on it, like train stations, for example, you know. And I thought, let's go and see what's all involved, kind of get an aspect on your history, like what you were saying, Michael, you know. So it's really kind of interesting, Andy. It's just going right back to getting a grasp on your history. I know people in America, etc., you know, their history is very, very new, you know, but ours is going back.
Relatively, I mean, like, hello, almost 600 years. Like, new, I don't know how new is that. Young, we can say.
Young, yeah. I mean, America's, what, 1776? Was that the date of independence or so?
Yes,
something
exactly,
like that.
But we go way back.
Way back? How far back?
Yeah, far back. But, you know,
really?
It's Speaking of this kind of languages that a lot of people might seem that they're not so useful, here, for example, in Spain, where I am currently based, it's really interesting because, for example, here they have communities, yes, like Comunidad of Madrid, Catalonia, Valencia, Valenciana, all those things. And it's really interesting because, for example, they teach it in schools. And for me, this is, and for example, you can enroll your child in, you know, like they will have the subject, like the main language, which is here is Spanish. But if you're interested, you can also enroll your child in Valenciano or Catalan.
Yes.
And it's really interesting because, for example, if you want, and this is like strictly related to work, if you want, for example, like some specific jobs, like for the government, you have to speak the language. You've got to be like really proficient in the language. So I think that this is kind of a way to keep it alive, which I think is interesting. There, it has its handicaps, of course. I think that it's interesting, like in a way to keep the language alive.
Live, absolutely. I, you know, in Scotland, we have the Scots language, which is like an old Germanic language, Northern Germanic language. It's like a sister language to English. And if we spoke in a with a Scots dialect at school, you know, we would get into trouble. You know, they would, why are you speaking slang and stuff, you know? And we were, you know, in some schools they would beat it out of you, you know? So we weren't allowed to keep it alive. But thankfully it's coming back into kind of fashion now, you know?
Yes.
So great. So excellent. So let's have a look at what we're going to talk about today. So when we get lots of questions in, and lots of English learners, they kind of feel isolated when they're learning. You know, I know from being in, I stayed in China for a while, and everybody wanted to learn, and we set up an English cafe in one of the cities, and on a Friday night at 7 o'clock, and the place got crammed out because everybody wanted to come to this cafe and learn to speak English, you know. But if someone doesn't have anyone to speak to improve their English, what do you think they should do? Now, I know we all speak a couple of languages. I speak a couple. I know Andy speaks fluently bilingual or trilingual, I think. And Michael, you've learned to speak a couple of the Asian languages as well. You were learning to speak Chinese at one point.
I'm still trying.
Are you still trying, are you? So how would you want to improve your language if you don't have anyone to speak to? Michael, what would you say?
I mean, as you two probably get a lot, I get this question quite a lot. And the first thing I always reply is, first of all, you know, maybe it's obvious, but try to find someone you can speak to. I know that's not the question, but because we do have the internet in most places around the world, you can use that to find language partners and teachers if you can afford them as well. But let's say for some reason you cannot get any of that. Speaking is obviously going to be the hard thing to practice. And I think in that case, one thing that a really specific thing I found really helpful is just like a daily practice of recording yourself. Like it could be like an audio diary, right? So you know, record your voice, talk about what you've been doing in the week, your plans for next week. You don't have to send it anywhere, but I just think the fact that you're practicing and getting your voice out there, it's definitely better than nothing, for sure.
What do you think, Andy?
Michael stole my idea. I was going to say about recording yourself. I'm kind of like, no, he already said it. You know, the thing is that when you record yourself, first of all, you're going to be a little bit surprised because you're going to sound like, this is how I sound. Because it is definitely a different experience when you're just speaking and you think that you sound in one way, but when you record yourself and you see where you stress the words. How, for example, the melody of the sentence goes up and down. You can actually take that recording as a sample, so how you can make it even better. So if your main idea is to improve your speaking on your own, like you have nobody to talk to, also another idea, and I know that for some, this is really, really an uncomfortable one, but it's golden. Like practice in front of the mirror. For example, when I, you know, take off my hat as a English coach, as exam certification, you know, like stuff, I go and put on the hat like, okay, let's work on business English. For business English, especially when we're talking about presentations, it is really important that you have a better control of your body language. And like by speaking in front of the mirror, you can see how you use your hands. If your position, your body position is if you're slouching, if you are, you know, like straight, if you look as if, because maybe in your mind you feel confident enough, but maybe your facial expression doesn't match to the feeling. So remember that when you are speaking, when you're trying to communicate, it's not just whatever comes out of your mouth, it's everything that accompanies that. So, we humans tend to say a lot more with our body language than what we actually do say with words. So I think that, you know, while you're thinking about improving your speaking, don't forget to take care of the other communicational aspects of that interaction.
How do you know what you should be doing with your body language, etc.? If you're going to be watching yourself in the mirror, how do you know that the gestures you are doing are going to fit into what you're wanting to say, Andy?
Well, usually I always speaking, if we are, we have to understand the context where we're going to be in, especially because if I am going to give a presentation and it's just going to be me and the audience, I have to know my audience. Are there going to be cultural aspects that I have to take care of, such as like there are certain expressions that are definitely not recommended if you are speaking to a specific audience. For example, this is my Italian heritage, but I gesticulate a lot and I move a lot and I have to cut it down sometimes because I can find myself doing this, you know, kind of like, yeah, but
what does this mean with the hands and a kind of your fingers all clamped together at the top?
This is life, you know? Okay, this is life. No, I'm kidding. This is life. when Italians do this, is kind of like, well, what are you trying to say? Or I don't know, it's a feeling. I don't know how to express it, but it's a feeling. But knowing your audience, I think that is knowing your audience and being prepared about what is it exactly that you want to say and do you want to communicate. It's kind of like a killing combo. I don't know if you guys, you know, teach that in your sessions, if you accompany that.
Michael, you said there that you're going to practice speaking. What sort of things should people be practicing speaking? Is that right? What sort of things should people practice speaking? What sort of things should people practice speaking? Got my gerunds there mixed up.
you mean when recording themselves? Is that what you
mean? Yes, absolutely.
This
is what a lot of people say. What should I do? So if you're going to record yourself speaking, what should you be doing?
Yeah, I think it's very level dependent. So if you are a beginner, I think it's a really nice idea just to talk about, it's good practice with tenses like, today I am doing this, tomorrow I want to do this, and this kind of stuff. If you're more advanced, I think it's a really nice idea to do some hypotheticals, like if I could live anywhere in the world, I would want to live here, and just kind of answer these.
What's a hypothetical to someone who doesn't know?
That's a good question. It's a question or idea about something that is not true, but it could be true, right?
All right, okay.
If I could go to space, I would go to Mars, something like that.
Is that true?
Yeah, why not?
If you have brains. All right, yeah, so it's like the conditional form, like the second conditional form, right?
And also incorporating words and grammar that you've been learning elsewhere in your studies. Like if you had if you're studying grammar and you're learning about the conditional form, let's say with if, then try to incorporate that into your speaking as well, or whatever writing or whatever else you're doing.
I recall when I was learning Spanish, I think I've maybe said this story before, I used to get a book, the newspaper, in the morning before my breakfast, and I would sit and for 10 minutes I would just read the newspaper, but I would speak out loud. Because I was very, very shy when I was, like everyone, I guess, like when you're learning a new language, you don't want to make a mistake, you know, you want to think, oh my God, am I going to really be stupid here, sound really thick and stupid? But I was very much like that. I was very nervous. And so I used to get the newspaper in Spanish in the morning and have my toast and my tea, and I would just start speaking in Spanish, you know, whatever it said. I didn't understand what it said, some of the words, vocabulary, I had no idea, but I just wanted to speak, you know, me llamo Ken, yo tengo 20, and I would speak Spanish for 10 minutes. And I didn't know if it was correct, but what it did do is it made me a little bit more confident, because I always think when you're speaking or practicing a language, it's like going to the gym. You're kind of exercising your language skills, you know. So I felt that I got a lot more confident with it. And then I started going on to like small books, started reading Spanish, but I would do it out loud. And it kind of really improved my Spanish. With your Chinese, Michael, how do you practice your Chinese if you've got no one to speak to?
Not very well at the moment, but... Say if I've got no one to speak to, I mean, I do some speaking these days, but if, what else do I do? Well, one thing I find really helpful is lots of summaries. So every day I try to do, I try to do a bit of reading. I've got like a graded reader that I use.
What do you mean reader? What do you mean by that?
Graded reader is a book that is designed for learners. So it uses a more limited amount of vocabulary. It's not not super advanced words, and it's kind of words that you'll be using in daily conversation,
right?
And it's a somewhat easy story. It's not too difficult, so I find that very useful. Do a little bit of reading a day.
How do you, because Chinese is obviously the language is it's not intonational. What is it? It's got tonal. That's the word I'm looking for. So it's a tonal language, right? So how do you know that you're pronouncing those words correctly? For example, in when I speak Thai, Thai's got six tones. So to say the word rice would be cow, but if you went cow, 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 this all means six different words. You know, it can mean white or news, etc. So how do you know what you're saying is correct?
I've just started learning Thai this week, actually.
Oh, really? Have you?
I've just got to the tones, and it looks much harder than Chinese already. it might not be. I don't know. But if you're reading Chinese, there's no way of knowing tones. It doesn't tell you. You have to memorize every word and the tone. But perhaps the same as Thai. I'm not sure, because Thai has a different alphabet. But you have kind of the Latinized version of Chinese where you can read
the karaoke version, they say.
yeah
they call it karaoke, you know. It's they have the Latin language at the bottom. If you go to karaoke in Thailand, it's very popular, same in China, I guess. They have the Thai language, and also they have the karaoke version, which is the Latin script underneath. You know,
so you can do that, and then above in Chinese, above the Latin script, it will have the little accent above it, the punctuation that shows you what tone it is. But you have to kind of memorize that. And if I'm not sure, I can put it into Google Translate, and that will also tell me the tones.
Yeah, I believe it's called the pinyin system.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, very knowledgeable, Andy. I like it. What is it, the Pinyin?
The Pinyin, because the Pinyin system is like really interesting for us Western, you know, cultures, and that we have a very specific alphabet. The Pinyin is a really lifesaver, and it helps us to give it more sense, because it's a way to phonetically learn how to read or to say that character. So it is actually really interesting, the Pinyin system. But then you have, everything comes with a little bit of a handicap, you know, because whatever it is that you do that may help you in a way, if you get used to Pinyin, then when you're in front of the character, you're like, what is that? Because then phonetically and by ear, it's kind of like, oh, I understand everything, and you can have a conversation, but then when it comes to reading, you're absolutely lost. So if you're driving and you need it, you're gonna be lost. That's the end of the story. So what I would say is that if you're, you know, like learning a new language, in this specific case, that is like with characters, like it is really important, of course, because the idea is to speak. Wonderful. But don't forget to kind of like accompany it with the character itself. But when it comes to English, it's not so crazy, that advice either, because our language is really interesting as well, because it's not phonetic. It's not phonetical. I mean, a lot of my students, they always complain. It's kind of like, why? Why are you doing this to me?
What do you mean it's not phonetic, Andy? What do you mean by that?
It means that whatever it is that, to put it plainly, whatever it is that you read, it definitely might not be what the way that you pronounce it, spell it. It's, so for those that, for example, are starting to learn the language, or they're even like in intermediate levels, don't get discouraged, because that's one of the reasons why, you know. And of course, that because it's incredibly irregular. It's one of the most irregular languages out there. So
is this like the, like this here, the GH sounds at the end? It's not, phonetically what, it seems.
I thought that you liked me. I mean, honestly, why are you doing that? Honestly, I mean, especially for those that are dyslexic, or, you know, like have any learning disability. Lord, it is so hard. So, for example, if you pronounce it, could you boys give me a hand and pronounce it for me? The first one.
Michael. Through.
I mean, I'm notoriously bad at TH sound, but yeah, through.
Are you through? Do you say an F sound or a T or a th sound?
I say F out of habit, but I'm trying to say TH and practice more, because I'm a teacher now, you know.
Yeah.
You have to speak properly.
But for example, from the student perspective, if they're going to read it, like for instance, a Spanish speaker or Italian speaker or Portuguese, they're going to be like thorough. Then it's like a different word if I'm talking about the first one, and not to mention number two. How do you boys, you know, like read that one?
Tough.
Because you know, because you're the teacher. That's what they tell me. You know that because you're the teacher. Tough, right? But in their case, they're going to be like tug, tog. Yes. What solution? Go to the dictionary, and especially the formal ones. I do like word reference. I'm a big fan, but. The name says it. The app is called Word Reference, and it helps, but not all the time. So go to formal dictionaries, and usually they do have a section where they help you with the pronunciation, and they can even give it to you in different, you know, accents that might help. And I think that, of course, let's not open a can of worms here with the accent thing, but it makes you closer to the accent that you would like to achieve, let's say.
Good.
Very interesting.
Excellent. through we tough try. Aura.
We try. It's the point is not only to look pretty here.
Brilliant. So, Inans, how do we improve, in a nutshell then, how do you improve your English if you don't have anyone to speak to, in one sentence, Michael?
Talk to yourself and record your own voice.
Excellent, Andy.
Nothing. He stole my idea. I gave you
I knew it.
Now, let's move on.
Yeah, let's go on to the next one. So the next one is, I know what I want to say, but it doesn't come out what I want or how I want. How to improve this? You have everything you want to say in your mind, and in your mind you sound like a complete native speaker from Cornwall. But then when you come to say it, nothing comes out the way you want to do it. One of the big problems, and I always call this blank brain syndrome. Mm-hmm. You know, you're ready to say it, but your brain and your tongue don't connect.
Yeah.
So how to improve this, how to get it from your brain out your mouth. What would be the number one thing that you can say? I'll start this one, right? Because this is something that I kind of always try and help my students with, especially when they're preparing for interviews in English. They have to have set stories that they want to say, and they want to make it believable, not just repeating like robot fashion, but actually putting some feeling into it. I always tell my students to, whatever you want to say, whatever conversation you want to have, you have to kind of practice it. If you just want to do something off the cuff, like with off the cuff means to do it without any practice, it becomes nearly impossible because your brain is maybe 3 seconds behind and your mouth's, you know, 500 miles an hour and you're not coordinating your brain and your mouth. I always say that you should kind of practice and have it prepared what you want to say. So I'll give you an example. I was, as I mentioned before, I was learning Spanish, and I had to make a phone call in Spanish, and I was so scared, you know, and I was for an apartment to rent, and I saw the sign for rent, and I thought, what am I going to say here? You know, I was sweating buckets. I was really panicking, you know. I thought, I'm going to lose this apartment. So what I did was I went away and I wrote down a conversation, a dialogue, what I wanted to say, what I would say first, what they would say, and then the conversation would go. For example, it would be, buenos dias, how are you? I'm fine, muy bien, gracias. Y tú, how are you? And blah, blah, blah. And I did this, and I wrote down a conversation till I got to the end. I want an apartment to rent. Okay, how much is it? Blah, blah, blah. And I would have this two-way conversation, and I practiced it for 24 hours, you know. And so the big day came. I picked up the phone, or my mobile phone. I didn't have one of these old phones. I picked up my phone, and I just started. And I just bit the bullets. I just did some. To bite the bullet means to do something really uncomfortable, but you do it. And I did it, and it was much easier than what I thought because I was well prepared, you know. So in answer to this particular question here, how to improve what you want to say, it all comes down to preparation. Consider yourself an actor. An actor doesn't go into the movie without knowing the lines. And when you're learning a language, think of yourself as an actor initially until you get the confidence to do it. That would be my advice. What would you say, Andy?
No, I was thinking about what you were saying about confidence. And this is especially like, to give it a little bit of a turn of the question, like, okay, what happens if it catches you on, you know, like with your guard down?
Off guard.
Yeah, exactly. Because a lot of people actually, when they plan, as you said, which is the best advice, like always be prepared, like scout. Uh-huh. Right. But what happened when you are caught off guard? Here is where people panic. Oh, by the way, they're saying hello from Egypt.
Yeah, hello.
People from Egypt. All right. So the thing is that what to do? In my case, I can you go back to the question, please? Because I love thoughts. This happens very often.
You lost your train of thought. Blank brain syndrome. You just suffer from blank brain syndrome there.
Yes,
right?
Or as we call it in the US, a little bit of a brain fart here.
A brain fart.
Yes, I know. It's not very pretty, but that's how we call it. Uh-huh. Here, okay, so you know what you want to say, but it comes out. Oh, okay. Yes, in this case, sometimes when we want to say something fluently, mm-hmm. and this happens regardless of the language, regardless of your level, I don't know if you guys agree, happens to natives, it happens to all of us. And it's because, for example, like what happened right now to me, that I lost my train of thoughts.
Uh-huh.
Because maybe a lot of things are going on up there. So my advice would be slow down. Slow down, take a deep breath. Because, for example, in my case, this is something that I have learned to do recently, like a couple of years from now, because I am usually a very anxious person by nature. And I'm always kind of like very hyper, like, yeah, let's do this. And I'm kind of like, I was that kid.
Enthusiastic.
Well, if you want to call it that way, but I was that kid in the classroom that it was always like, yeah, let's do this. And like, teacher. Yes, I was that kid. So slow down, especially if you want to, you know, especially in business environments, slow down. If you want to sell something, you know, the pause, it has power, you know, to pause and to enunciate your words. It really does add some power and let the other party, you know, like the other person, actually understand what is it that you're saying, like to digest the message.
Andy, you're talking there about pausing. A lot of people will feel uncomfortable. They'll feel that if they stop speaking,
natural pause, I mean,
it'll be like an awkward silence. How do you overcome that feeling of having this awkward silence or not having this awkward silence?
Well, sometimes I do let awkward silences, you know, be there. I think that we have to be okay with awkward silences, because sometimes it's better not to say something that it's stupid. And I'm sorry, but that's how I feel. Rather than, because, for instance, I am a big fan of small talk, because without small talk, we cannot get deeper talks, right?
Mm.
So, sorry, guys. Real life. Hello, we are live. So, and I forgot about that. But anyways, when we're talking about this kind of situations where you are in a, and again, I lost my train of thoughts. Honestly, this is why we have to turn off our phones. Yes.
So awkward silences. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Thank you. When we're in the middle of awkward silences, we have to learn how to be okay with awkward silences. Because if you think about it, instead of that, why don't we think of asking better questions?
All right.
Also giving the others, you know, the opportunity to actually also express themselves and to be okay with it, like to enjoy the moment, or just to, if you're going to comment about something because you're really uncomfortable about it, make it logical, you know? Like, for instance, if you guys are enjoying a cup of coffee, or if you're on a date, and maybe because that's everything doesn't have to be about work and business, right? So if you're on a date, for example, awkward silences happen very often, and we have to learn to be okay with that. I don't know if you guys agree with me when it comes to awkward silences, but I think that
Michael, what do you think?
Yeah. I think another point I would add is learning, I guess, like kind of filler words and phrases to indicate that you're thinking, because
oh, Michael's gone.
Oh,
he's gone. He's stuck.
Yeah.
He's just going stuck.
Yeah, by the way, I apologize about the phone thing. I always forget that I have two phones. I know that's totally silly. But anyway,
but what Michael was saying there was have these phrases ready. And I always tell my students, if you're waiting for something to think, then have this expression. And the expression is, what do you mean by that? And that way, if somebody's speaking and you don't understand what they're saying or you've missed the point, while you're thinking about it, the other person is going to be answering you back for your question. So you're speaking away, they're speaking away, and you say, what do you mean by that? And then they will go in to explain it again, and that'll give you kind of enough time to think about what you're saying, you know?
you know, to imagine that you are, for example, in a situation where the person that you're talking to is very nervous as well, because they're not very fluent in the language either, but maybe because your personality is a little bit more outgoing, another way that can improve your confidence and also help the other person, because in the end, if we want to have a successful communication, we have to help the other person. It's not a monologue, right? Yeah. So a good way is to ask them to explain it a little better, even though you've understood it perfectly well.
Yeah, exactly.
It gives them like the opportunity to be in command of the situation.
Yeah.
But from a humble place, meaning not like putting them, you know, under the spot, because then you're going to break any kind of successful communication that the person will block. But yeah. I think it is very nice, you know, to ask someone if like, oh, I don't understand it. Could you elaborate the question again? For me, it's a little bit hard to understand this or that, or I've always struggled with this concept. Yes. So I think that it's always nice to ask the other person to elaborate their answer.
Absolutely. I always think that when you're speaking a different language, it's like a game of tennis. Even when you're speaking English, it's like a game of tennis. You will hit across your point, your opinion or your point, and the other person will hit it back. Yes. So here's Michael back. So it's kind of like you know, it's like a game of tennis. I always
and
feel,
I love
you
the
know?
Fact that you're comparing it, you know, with the sport, with the game, because in the end, what is important is to have fun, is to enjoy the moment that where you're right now. So Michael, hi, welcome back. What happened,
Michael?
Internet.
Oh, he's gone again.
It's like magic. Okay, yeah, so let's move on to the question. So let's
let's move on. Here he comes again. Okay, so Michael, I can't hear you.
You cannot hear me?
Oh yeah, I can hear you now. There.
Okay, about that. I don't know what happened there.
That's all right. So Michael, what were you saying about if you want to improve? You were talking about having words and phrases. Do you remember?
Yeah, I was saying if you awkwardly stop in the middle of a sentence and, like I did, and your internet cuts out. I think it's really helpful if you learn some phrases. So if I were to say, what was I thinking of? Like, oh, that's a good question. Let me think about that for a second. Or, let me think. What could I say? Or these kind of phrases, I think that makes awkward silences less awkward rather than just stopping without any warning, you know?
Yeah. I used to be a DJ and many years ago when I was in my early 20s, and I used to always kind of panic a little that this was the time there was microphones and you had to speak to the audience, you know. We had records, you know, vinyl records, etc.
Amazing.
And I always used to panic. I thought, what happens if I don't know what to say? And the guy who was kind of mentoring me in it, he said, it may sound... if there's a silence, it may sound terrible for you, but for everyone else, they don't notice it. So maybe when you speak, sounds like a lot, but to the other person, that silence is nothing at all. So even though when you're trying to grab your thoughts, I guess don't be too worried about the silence.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's always, I went to acting school as well, and this was part of it as well, is like, it's as Andy says earlier on, it's all about you kind of, sometimes it's non-verbal communication can take the place of the actual words themselves as well, you know?
Ken, you're a box of surprises. You were a DJ. I love that. I really do.
I wanted to be a musician, you know, but I was just rubbish at the guitar and singing. So it was the next best thing. And that was being a DJ, you know. Best times of my life. Really good. I loved it.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to the next one.
Yeah, next one. Ah, so let's have a look here. Let's see if I've got this big enough. Here we go. Mm-hmm. Okay, oh, this nice wee setup here. How long does it take to learn English? I want to learn and I am patient. So this question is, they want to learn English, but they want to know how long it takes to learn English. Dun, 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 dun.
It's good how that, he, that he or she is patient.
Michael, how long does it learn to take to learn English?
I think it's like 700 days, something like that.
700 days.
Again, this is a question I get all the time too, and I always reply with, it depends what you mean by learn. Like, when do you reach a point where you have learnt English? Because it's not something you can complete 100%. You know, in no languages, any language is an ongoing process where, you know, I've had students before who, honestly, I feel like they're better than me at many things. Like vocabulary, they're super advanced, and yet they're still learning every day. I think there's always more to learn. If you do have a more specific idea, like I want to get to like C1 level, I want to be able to confidently talk to strangers, and you have a clear idea of what that means. Again, it's really hard to say because it depends on the person. We all learn at different rates. It depends on how motivated you are to study. So it's kind of a bit of a like a cop-out answer, like not really addressing the question. But what I normally say is, rather than focus on how long it takes, try to focus on enjoying the journey. I think that's
enjoying the journey.
Yeah.
But when you're learning, though, is the journey not like a bumpy road that you're going to think, oh, get me off this? You know, it can be one of the hardest things in the world to do, to enjoy something that's so demanding. Yeah. So how would you say to someone, you know, it's difficult to enjoy, but you can. How can you enjoy it if it's difficult? If you're on, because a lot of students are under so much stress and pressure to pass exams or to pass an interview, you know, or you know, or to look good in front of their peers, the people around about them. So how can you tell someone to enjoy the ride, enjoy the journey?
I think first of all, it's important to make it clear that there will be ups and downs, like a roller coaster. You will have bad days. In that case, I think it's good to have a really strong study routine in place, like that habit of learning. So you're not just relying on motivation to keep you going. You've got that routine. So today, this morning, I wasn't really in the mood to study Chinese, but I did it anyway because it's my routine. But yeah, I would say have a think about what you could change in your study methods and how you can make it more fun. So for example, maybe you're going through like a grammar textbook every day. And I think probably for most people, that's not super fun. So maybe you could consider changing to, you know, if you like, this is what I do actually. If you're interested in travel, you could find some travel blogs in English and start reading them every day, and you're having fun, but you're also picking up some words. So I don't think language learning has to be boring, but that's not to say there aren't bad days.
You don't want it to become tedious. Tedious means boring and a routine that you just don't enjoy doing. What about you, Andy? How long does it take to learn English?
No, I was thinking about it, you know, from a certification perspective, because based on what Michael was saying, that 700 hours, 900 hours or whatever, when you are preparing for an exam, it is easier in a way to more or less have a better understanding of how long you're going to be studying or preparing for the exam. Because there is like an average of hours, and what is interesting,
what do you mean there's an average of hours? What do you mean by that?
There is an average of hours that, for example, when it comes to each exam preparation, they the official pages, they always say that as an average, X student, if they complete X amount of hours, they more or less would be ready for the exam. But of course, as the word average means, is like, it really depends on the person, because in the end, we're unique individuals, right? Now, the thing is that when people get ready, for example, for exams, it's like when you're going to take a test, you got to be sort of ready for it, or, right? So you have to have a little bit of a level. And for people that are learning a language, that's absolutely different. So let's make the differentiation there. Because learning a language comes to learning the culture of that language.
Yeah.
And because without learning the culture of that language, how is it that you're going to understand the language that you're learning? I know it's a little bit of, you know, a tongue twister there, but I think that this is important. And a lot of teachers, I think that, you know, don't introduce it in their classes, you know, the idea that if you learn the language, they do it as if it's another subject instead of this life tool that is really going to expand your horizons for life. So if you're going to approach learning English or any language for that matter, it is, I think, essential to see it in that way. You know, in order to actually get better this way, you're going to feel it as a journey and not as you're like hiking with my mom, you know, like with somebody in your ear. Like, sorry, mom, if you're listening to this, I love you.
You know, I mean, I was in Thailand and I remember you're talking about the culture side of things. I remember a lot of students would come up to me and say, "Gin Khao Ru Yang," which means, "Have you eaten yet? Have you eaten or not?" And I would say, I've eaten, yes. And they would look at me, and it wasn't until later on, it was the culture that they were actually saying, "Are you okay? Are you taking care of yourself? Everything okay with you?" So I think they do it in Chinese as well. They ask you, you know, "Have you eaten yet?" as a kind of greeting, as part of their vocabulary culture, you know. I think it's amazing, you know.
Very, very different, isn't it?
Oh, totally different, you know. And they always, a term of endearment is in Thailand, when you go there, Michael's off to Thailand in August. But they call everyone fatty. It's a term of endearment. Which is like hello fatty type thing, you know. But it's, and at first I was shocked. It's like, why are you saying this? And it's just a term of endearment to call someone fat. If you love someone, to call them fat.
This,
you know,
is so interesting, because in Latin American, if you call somebody gordito, yes, gordita is kind of like, oh, honey, sweetheart. Yes. And I think that's lovely. I think that is so lovely. I feel like a teddy bear whenever my students call me like that. It's kind of like, yes, whatever you want.
Oh, I'll give it you.
Yes. Kind of like, mm-hmm, yeah.
I suppose in English it would be chubby cheeks. Hello, chubby cheeks.
Yeah, you know?
A little bit rude though, isn't it?
It's not that cute. For this reason, learning the culture behind it is so interesting, because it's so important, because otherwise you wouldn't make sense to it, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, I think if someone's wanting to learn English and they're patient, one thing from learning other languages, is think of it as like you're walking up some steps. There's a meme on floating about the internet, and it's somebody at the bottom of the stairs and they move their leg up to the fifth step, and it's like how to learn English, and they go straight for the idioms rather than learning the little bits in between. And I always feel it's like have a small goal every day. So for example, when I was learning Spanish, my very first goal was to answer the telephone in Spanish, and all it was "Hola, buenos dias," and the name of the company. And they would say a name, Miguel. And I would say, "¿Quién es? Who is it?" And that was the first thing, you know. My goodness, un momentito, por favor. And that was it. I was speaking Spanish, and it was a huge kind of boost for me, you know. Just a couple of sentences like that, you know, having these little goals, yeah. Yeah. What goals do you have with your languages, Michael? What's your goal in Chinese?
In Chinese, my main goal is just to be able to communicate with my wife's family. She's Chinese. Uh-huh. So that's a very important one. So I think the main goal is just, I guess it's a bit different than what you're saying. That's my kind of eventual goal, my long-term goal. I guess I don't really make like short-term goals, like you're saying, but what I try to do is focus on any little successes I have. So if I do, you know, very occasionally I might say hello to a Chinese person in the street, or say, "Oh, excuse me, like I'm coming through."
Yeah.
And then they go, "Oh, you speak Chinese, so cool." Like, yeah, my wife's Chinese. And this is all in Chinese. Uh-huh, and it's like two sentences, but then I'm kind of, I'm so proud of myself. I'm thinking about it all day rather than going, oh, I could have done that better. I think really focus on what you did well is great to push you
absolutely
further next time. Yeah.
Mm. Absolutely. Yeah.
Can I tell you something, guys? I think that the great feeling that we have is because, not really because of the language itself, but the connection that we've made.
Totally.
Language is all about that. It's about like, what is the connection that you, that's why, for example, I always insist in small talk. Like, small talk is actually really, really important. I mean, there is really good small talk out there that, you know, can really take connections and conversation a lot further. So absolutely. I think that feeling that is kind of like you're floating, I guess, right, Michael? I think that is what you're trying to say, like, la, yes, I know.
I remember I was in Paris and I was waiting for the boat and I'd not spoken French for so long and I'm sitting waiting on the boat just minding my own business and a woman came up to me and she said something like vous attendez ici pour le bateau and I'd not spoken French for so long and immediately I responded in French was yes, I'm waiting here for the boat and she went oh merci and she walked away and a couple of seconds later I thought, she's just spoken French to me. And I've replied without thinking. And it was a hallelujah moment. I was so chuffed with myself. I was so pleased. I was walking on air, you know.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah.
A little bit of something is always better than a little bit of nothing.
Absolutely. Grab your achievements and celebrate them, you know. Okay, so we'll move on. We're running out of time here. So we'll move on. We'll take this one, last one. Which books should I read to improve my English skills? Which books? This is an open question.
Yeah, I think that we should go like quick round. I think that Michael mentioned it before. Great readers. I would say, for example, Penguin Readers. For those that are looking graded readings, are, as Michael mentioned, are like specialized books for English language learners or for that matter. And I think that these are the best option. They're not particularly easy. You know, it really depends on the level, but I think, yeah. So Penguin Readers, and if you want something for free, there is...
Free, my favorite word.
Yes, Oxford Bookworms Library. I will say it again. Oxford Bookworms Library, and this is a website that you can go to and you can find lots of really nice free stuff.
Oxford Bookworms?
Yes, Oxford Bookworms Library.
Thanks. Okay. So let's Oxford Bookworms Library. I've put this on the screen, yeah? Oxford, so you just search in Google for this, yeah?
And it comes exactly. Up, yeah?
Oxford Bookworms. Excellent. Cool, Michael.
Yeah, I totally agree with Andy. If you can afford it, I would always recommend go on Amazon. If you have Amazon in your country, just type in English graded reader. I've seen there's so many there.
Uh-huh.
Apart from that, I would say, again, very general answer, just whatever you enjoy. Like earlier, I mentioned about travel blogs. Honestly, I'm not a big reader. I don't really enjoy reading that much. I'm more of an audio person. I love podcasts. So that's why I tend to read blogs and stuff like that. As I used to kind of sit down and try to read, books in Japanese and stuff. And I never really enjoyed it. I guess the feeling of, I can read this. That was quite exciting, like that accomplishment. But the actual process of reading, I never really liked. So I
you told me enjoy the journey, not the destination. You said that earlier, huh?
Do as I say, not as I do.
I do. Practice what you preach, right?
Yeah.
I think you're right. I think whatever you do, it has to be enjoyable, you know? It has to be. One thing I've started doing is... forums. I enjoy football. I just enjoy my own football team. I don't enjoy any other football team or anything. I like, because I live in a small community, I like the forums. And I think it's really good for English learners, if you enjoy football, is to find your football team in the UK and go into the forums and in the message boards, because you will find some fantastic vocabulary there. Real life down in the dirt vocabulary, you know, from there. So I think forums are fantastic for picking up there. Yeah.
Yeah, something like Reddit, maybe. Yeah.
Reddit, exactly. Yeah, Reddit's really good. Excellent. Okay, one more. Help me find a native speaker. Michael, quickly.
My best advice would be don't expect to find someone to help you for free.
Yes.
Because you have to be polite to people that understand, you know, what they're getting out of it. Not everyone has the time to help. So find a language partner if you want to go the free way, where you find someone who is learning your language. So then you can do 50% talk in English, 50% in your native language. And
where can you find that? Where can you find these language exchanges?
I've had most success on the app HelloTalk. That's really
HelloTalk.
And a little bit of a more outdated, what's the word? Kind of, it looks like a bit of a dated website now, but I think it's mylanguageexchange.com.
Mm-hmm. All right.
I've met some good people on there. I think it's just a website. It's not an app. And the only issue with that is you have to spend $5 a month membership. But what I do is I pay $5, I message someone, and then I don't join again because I've already got a partner, you know.
That's cheating.
Well, you don't talk on the website. You generally move it off to Skype or wherever else. I think it's fine.
Yeah. No wonder the business is going out of business. Andy?
Find someone that actually can help you. And as Michael said, don't expect for it to be for free. And if you actually do want to improve in a faster way, just go ahead and find a good certified teacher, more than focusing on native. Platforms such as TikTok or Instagram or Facebook are really good platforms where you can find this certified teachers. Always make sure that they are certified, because this means that they not only will accompany, they will have experience and at the same time methodology, which is what is going to actually make you come through with the language and, progress with it. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would say. Basically that's it. Don't focus too much on native. Focus more on a person who is experienced and certified more than.
Yeah, absolutely. And also, as well, you know, find some, as you say, they don't need to be certified, but if someone's on the same path as you, you know, that's they're looking for what we call a study buddy.
Yeah.
You'll find them. Just ask somebody, if somebody want to be a study buddy, go to the comments on Instagram and Facebook and ask. You won't find the ideal partner immediately. You'll need to sift through, which means you'll need to go through a couple, but you will find someone. There are always people looking to have partners to practice with. Anything else you'd like?
Andy? No, we've come to an end. No.
Yes, we've come to an end. I'll just put this up here. Yeah. Anything else you'd like to add to this, Michael?
I was only thinking about what Andy said about native speakers, which I think is a great point. Just my final words maybe is, like I said before, I've had students who, probably in some ways make fewer mistakes than I do in my clumsy native English, who have also been teachers, by the way. They're teachers of English themselves. So I think it's a shame that a lot of non-native speakers find it harder to get students because they're not native, even though they are sometimes more qualified to teach.
Absolutely.
So yeah, it doesn't have to be native. That would be my final
point. I was going to say as well, I always say that non-native teachers are probably more qualified because natives have the vocabulary, etc., but non-natives know what it's like to learn a new language, you know. So in a lot of respects, they're above kind of native speakers, you know.
In my opinion. If you think of it, they're gonna read your mind basically, because they know what is it exactly what you're going through
exactly,
and where they can anticipate your mistakes. something that unless that this native, I hope, certified teacher that you find out there, unless that this person is like really into the culture that, like, for example, people who speak Spanish from Spain or Latin America or Italian or something like that, if they really do understand the culture, they can help you even more
Absolutely.
Than if they're just like monolinguals, right? Think about
Excellent.
That.
Exactly. Exactly.
All right. I think that
okay.
We're done. For today.
Michael, I just want to say thank you. It's been a couple of years since I've spoken to you, but it's been great to see you again.
You too. Thank you. Great to meet you, Andy.
Same here.
Hopefully we'll get a meet up before you go away to Thailand, yeah? We'll do this again, yeah? So thanks very much for those that have been watching in, and we'll put this out on the podcast. And we'll have on the program notes everyone's contact details. If you need to speak to anyone directly, you can do. So for me, this is Ken. I'll say goodbye. Andy, say goodbye.
Yes, and this is Andy. Thank you so much. And don't forget to follow Andy's Everyday English. It was a pleasure to be with you today. Ken, have a good one.
And see you later.
Bye, everybody.